This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the DeAndre Hopkins market. Not as white hot as I think DeAndre Hopkins was anticipating, I don't think.
There have been a couple of reports that it's, I think Albert Breer called it a tepid response from teams so far.
Yeah.
I mean, the big thing is, it's just this is the time of year when teams that wanted to do something big with receiver already did it either in the draft or in free agency. And a lot of the teams that wanted to make a huge move at receiver, let's be honest, they did it last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody willing to pull off a bonkers trade for an A.J. Brown or a Tyreek Hill and then give a huge contract on top of it, they've done that already.
This DeAndre Hopkins is basically the equivalent of a store owner that's deciding to open his store 2 weeks after Christmas. You know, like, sorry, bro. We spent all our money for the holidays, dude. I'll see you in April.
A CPA opening up and saying we really need a big May to if we really want to make this thing go. Yes. We need May to be a huge month.
Exactly,
for us.
Yeah. Exactly. So here is Greg Cosell. What is DeAndre Hopkins right now, Greg Cosell? Greg Cosell, NFL Films, does film breakdowns that are tremendous. Here's Greg Cosell on DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, I still think that he's a quality receiver. He's a certain kind of receiver. He's not truly a vertical dimension. He's a tough, physical receiver who knows how to separate at the top of his route stem, creates just enough space to be able to make catches. He's really good in the short to intermediate areas. He certainly can help a team. Obviously, he's very physical. He's got great hands. He can help any team. You just have to understand what he is. You're not signing DeAndre Hopkins because you want a big play vertical receiver. You're signing DeAndre Hopkins because he can be a chain mover. He can also be a sustainer if you want to throw a lot on first or second down.
It's weird, Seth, is that there's been since the Hopkins got cut last week, there's been a lot of talk like that, like Cosell. And Cosell does a great breakdown on him there, but the fact that DeAndre is not somebody who gets open quickly at the line of scrimmage, he's not somebody who stretches the field, I almost feel like this is being, like, there's a lot of experts talking about this like it's new, like it's some sort of revelation. Like, this is always who he's been. You know?
And I think Cosell, in the longer version of that, he alludes to that, which is that it's not like, it's not that he's lost a step. It's that he never was that guy to begin with. But you're right. I guess he's never been evaluated as a free agent, really.
True.
And so I think maybe perhaps for people that, you know, have never really paid attention to it and they hear that DeAndre Hopkins is available, they have this vision of a guy who's going to come in and be an immediate threat on the outside and all that. And he's not that guy. But if you look at some of his peak plays from his prime, it's the run after the catch more so than the jets, than the initial burst. It's the run after the catch where he turns into, you know, like some running backs can run routes like receivers.
Yeah.
He's like a receiver that runs like a running back after the catch.
Okay.
You know, because, and especially, so some of his huge breakaways are where a team was playing aggressive defense, so there's no safety over the top, and as long as he beats that first cornerback, he's wide open down the field. Or, you know, maybe there is safety help over the top, but there's enough room for him to cut and spin and do what he did against Dallas. But it's not, it's not with his pure vertical speed that he's beating stuff. It's with his overall agility and strength and everything else.
Well, you saying that just now, like the name that pops into my head immediately is Deebo Samuel. Yeah. And I know they're built differently, but stylistically, that's what you were just describing, like getting the ball in the hands of a guy who turns into a running back. I mean, Deebo Samuel is literally a running back at times for the 49ers. you know, if I'm a 4 or a 5 on the Texans signing DeAndre Hopkins, you saying that moves it to a 5 or 6 for me. You know, like, okay, you know, this is the offense they're going to be running, the one that turned Debo Samuel into a $20 million, $25 million a year receiver. Okay.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's and if you watch the 49ers, especially once McCaffrey got there last year, it was a whole lot of, for anybody who's ever been frustrated for their offense throwing short of the sticks, the 49ers were routinely throwing 2 and 3 yards short of the sticks. And then Debo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk, especially those two, would catch it 2 or 3 yards short of the sticks and then drag one guy across the line to gain or beat that guy and get another 5, 6, 7 yards after that. And it's because they just had, between George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, those receivers, it was just impossible to blanket the sticks, you know? And I guess the question would be, all right, is that the situation you're going to have if DeAndre Hopkins comes to the Texans? I don't necessarily think that it would be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it just ends up being, all right, if nobody has a really nice bag out there, a nice bag of cash for DeAndre Hopkins, and the Texans are able to get him on a one-year deal, then, yeah, by all means, go for it,
yep.
I would say. It's just, it can't be at this stage like a 3-year $50 million deal or
Correct.
Something when you've got all these young guys on your team that you're trying to develop into something.
Yeah, and when theoretically you're going to advance to a point as a team where you're shopping in a different aisle in free agency down the road, because that cap space does roll over. You can use it, you know, next year, following year, and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think it's appropriate that we're sitting here talking about DeAndre Hopkins and James Harden at the same time, in the same context, because I have felt this way for a while, that I don't know that there's two athletes in Houston across different sports that share more similarity, at least back, maybe now, and certainly when they were playing here, than James Harden and DeAndre Hopkins. There are differences that I will acknowledge afterwards, but the four big similarities, tell me if I'm crazy, Seth, on these. DeAndre Hopkins and James Harden. Playing style. They're both guys who, we just got done talking about Hopkins, doesn't wow you with his speed, his traits, his athleticism. There's not an explosive nature to either of their games. And yet you look up at the end of a season, you look up at the end of a day with DeAndre Hopkins, you go, holy crap, he had 10 catches for 140 yards.
Yeah.
You know, you look up at the end of the season for James Harden and you're like, man, there's not a ton of like sizzle reel highlights for Harden. But he just step back threes and foul shoots his way to 35 points a night. That kind of thing.
I guess the one exception I'd make there is Harden. It's that he wasn't vertically explosive, but he was very, very fast in his peak. Like he was the fastest in the league
at
getting to the hole when driving. Yeah, which is what sets up his step back so well. I think though, but it was likewise though not glaringly obvious or dazzling to the eye or anything, and that's a lot like DeAndre Hopkins is.
Yeah, and I think with Harden too, his body type doesn't look like he should be the fastest one going end to end.
He's a bit doughy.
Yeah. He's got a physique that I'm like, oh, okay, wow, that guy was going 22 miles an hour from end to end. So
doughy by NBA standards. By, not,
well,
you know.
Doughy by societal standards when he wanted to get traded.
That was weird though, because I feel like he can gain and lose weight. No, I feel like he just
it melted off the second he got to Brooklyn. It was weird.
I think he just alters his sodium intake. I felt like when he wanted to get fat and look out of shape, he just, because he is a thicker dude.
Yeah.
Like whether he's lean or not, I feel like he just eats a couple pizzas a couple nights in a row and he just retains a bunch of water.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So playing style, I think, within their respective sports, the productivity for sure. You know, obviously the accolades, you know, beyond DeAndre was first team all pro for 3 years in a row. James Harden was first team all NBA for about a half a decade.
Right. And I agree with you. I didn't mean to like start splitting hairs. As far as like the playing style, the athleticism, all that stuff, one of the biggest things is they're both just incredibly crafty.
Yes.
Like both of them are masters at nailing like the nuances and the little wrinkles in the rules that you can exploit. DeAndre is a masterful push-off artist.
Yep.
And I say that with like no backhanded compliment or anything. Like he's just really good at understanding what you can and can't do, what is going to be called a push-off and what isn't. And like likewise Harden, whether it's the step back or the Euro step or anything else, like he just knows exactly where the line is and how to exploit that rule.
Here are the two similarities that matter now the most. Both of them, it's uncanny. Both of them are beginning to break down after years of being maybe the most durable athletes in this city.
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins missed two games as a Houston Texan, and it was basically because they sat him in the final week of the season. He, for the first 8 years of his career, he played 98.4% of the possible games. He missed two games in eight seasons. He's missed nearly half the games the last two seasons. He's played in 56% of the games the last two seasons after playing in nearly every game for the first eight. Harden's first eight seasons here in Houston, or his eight full seasons here, he played in 96% of the games, which in the NBA for a player of his level is really commendable. Like, it's, you know, people give James Harden a lot of flack for a lot of things, and deservedly so. That dude at least wants to play basketball. You know, like, he ain't Kawhi Leonard. You know, yeah. Like, he wants to play. I mean, I don't know if he does anymore. I don't follow him on a night-to-night basis. And in the last three years, he's only played in 70% of the games. So maybe he is a guy who wants load management now. I haven't followed it that closely. He did not want to be load managed here. He had seasons where he played all 82 games here.
Yeah. It was a pain in the ass for D'Antoni that, Harden wouldn't take time in the first couple quarters, right? Even just like, I'm not even talking about load management from game to game, but even load managing the first half to keep a guy fresh in the second half. Harden didn't want to do it. So yeah, he was a minutes junkie.
Yep.
He wanted to be out
junkie,
there.
Yes.
And it ended up, over time, I think it just wore down. Now, I don't know if Harden played through as many injuries as Hopkins did, but Hopkins played through a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, at least one either excuse or explanation for why he didn't practice a whole hell of a lot was that he was fighting through a lot of stuff that maybe other guys would have just bowed out and not wanted to, you know, especially when going up against a Richard Sherman or somebody, might have bowed out of that. But Hopkins always wanted it.
Yep. The other similarity that matters now with the two of them, Houston is home. They both make their home here in Houston. We saw Roosh Williams tweet yesterday talk about Hopkins' family being here, possibly factoring into his desire to become a Texan again. We know Harden's family is here. He's been very public about that. So I think how both of them feel about Houston is there's some eerie similarities almost to how Houston fits for them being for this being a place for them to return to.
Unlike, I guess if Hopkins had a restaurant, that would really complete the whole
deal.
Yes. Have you been to 13 yet?
I've not. I want to. I hear good things, actually.
All right, let's make a date. You and I can get together via FaceTime later. We'll set a date.
Okay.
And we'll go out on a date together to 13.
Love that. And that'll be that in the eyes of Charles Barkley, that will be the most awkward 5 minutes that you and I will ever experience. Setting a date on FaceTime.
Hey, Sean.
Hi, Seth.
What you doing tomorrow night?
Let's go to 13. The key differences between these two, DeAndre Hopkins and James Harden, how they left. James Harden, I think Rocket fans feel like he walked out on them. DeAndre Hopkins, I think, is a sympathetic figure in how he left. He was shipped out of here unceremoniously.
If he would have just left well enough alone, I think Hopkins really could have played that up. It's just, for whatever reason, I have to write this down as advice for athletes. For whatever reason, he decided to continue taking shots at the team even after Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby were gone. Well, after Bill O'Brien was gone.
Yeah.
I feel like once Jack Easterby was gone, I don't think he was taking any
I don't know if he was even playing. He was probably injured at that time.
But at a certain point, a lot of fans started to feel like, hey, man, all right, you're kind of – feels like you're poking at us, and we were with you, man. We supported you. So maybe just limit this to just the actual people that did you wrong. And he backed off of it eventually. But I know we hear from listeners. That left a sour taste in some Texans fans' mouths.
Yeah, I think so. And I'll get that. That's another key difference I'll get to in a second here. How their former teams feel about them may be a key difference. We know that. Yeah. Ownership of the Rockets loves James Harden. It's been reported as such. They are all for having James Harden back, reportedly. I would just say with Hopkins, we're not sure how the Texans feel about him. We just don't know. The ownership at least greenlit a trade of him in 2020. That we know.
And I
feel like that wasn't Cal saying, get this guy out of here. I think that was Cal letting his people do their job. Unfortunately, he let them do their job poorly, Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. But I would say that that's something, maybe it's not a poll, maybe it's not a difference that we know is a total opposite. We're just not sure how the Texans feel about Hopkins.
I've never gotten the sense that he was beloved by ownership the way an Andre Johnson or J.J. Watt was.
Yeah.
You know, I think I feel like a trade, as much as it felt like O'Brien and Easterby could have done anything they wanted, you know, I think it would have been different if they were trying to trade away Andre Johnson or J.J. Watt in their prime.
Yes.
So, you know, J.J. before his injuries, Andre when he was still young and in his prime, I think they might have stepped in at that point. For whatever that's worth, I don't think there's a sentimental attachment by the owners to DeAndre Hopkins the way there seems to be with Fertitta and James.
That's a great way to put it. All right, we don't need to dig too deep, I think, in this difference, how the fans in Houston feel about them. That's been well documented on Twitter polls and whatnot. Most Texan fans that follow the team are largely in favor of having Hopkins back, it feels like.
Yeah.
Most Rocket fans right now are like, you know, other than the hardcore, like, diehard, you know, soaked in red rowdy red. The Rocket fans feel jilted by James Harden. I want to hit this one quick because you added one here that's a good one, Seth. This is the fourth key difference between the two. James has a history of being a front office meddler, whereas Hopkins just seems to kind of roll with the punches when it comes to stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And I think that some of that's just the nature of the sport.
I agree.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Harden, the Russell Westbrook dynamic was the big weird one.
Yep.
But yeah, the one that I added just off the top of my dome, because it occurred to me that, okay, Julian Edelman was a guy that had a, he was one of the guys we listed that he's the only guy in the last 5 years who had a 1,000-yard season after the age of 31 or at age 31 or later. Hopkins turns 31 this coming week, I believe. Harden doesn't have a PED suspension way DeAndre Hopkins and Julian Edelman did. Julian Edelman had a PED suspension in 2018 after he was coming off that ACL injury. But then in 2019, at the age of 33, he had his 1,100-yard season. DeAndre Hopkins had his PED suspension at the beginning of last year.
He did.
Which would be, if it were Julian Edelman redux, this would be the year that DeAndre Hopkins would have over 1,000 yards.
Okay.
The latent effects of those... or latent benefits of those PEDs, perhaps, will kick in.
The Cardinals should have to pay some tax in this whole DeAndre Texans to Cardinals experience here. And if they have to pay the tax of not having him for half the season last year because of PEDs, and the Texans get to benefit on the back end by getting a 1,200-yard Hopkins, maybe partially because of PEDs, I feel like that's the universe. That's karma, we call that.
Let's see when did David Boston have his, if we want to really take it to the, a receiver who played for the Cardinals and what age he was when he got, boy, I'll tell you, David
he
Boston
looked
story.
Like he had PEDs.
I'll tell you a real quick story about David Boston. Yeah. We were playing the Cardinals and there was a defense, or no, I think he was with the Chargers. There's a defense where, you know, if the tight end swapped sides, we were going to change the defensive mm-hmm. front. David Boston came across in motion, and I'm looking out of my peripheral, and I just assumed it was a tight end coming over to my side. So I lined up wrong, and it left a huge bubble in the middle of the defense. I was very vocal, so I reset the entire defense.
Oh, jeez.
Because David Boston was bigger than any damn tight end alive.
You got duped. Yeah. That's funny. That is funny. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Brooks Cabina. He is our Texans insider. Of course, Houston Chronicle. He covers that Texans beat. We'll get his thoughts on DeAndre Hopkins and what he's seen out at OTA so far. Brooks Cabina joins us next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast on a Friday. It's Friday. It's headed towards the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, I'll call it. That can mean only one thing. Brooks Cabina, Houston Chronicle. He's our Texans insider, and he joins us on the hotline right now. Brooks, how we doing?
Hey, joining you live from Terminal C of the George Bush Airport.
Oh, so, I was just there last week. I was at Terminal C on my way to Vegas. Do you care to disclose where you're going, or do you like to keep that off the grid?
I'm going to be headed about 5,000 miles away, Scandinavia. So we'll be gone for about 10 days. So I'll be back by minicamp.
Okay.
Now I'm standing here, you know, as all these people are packing their bags and stuff. I'm wondering if I'm, you know, raising any eyes. Like, why is this guy not moving? He's just walking around with the phone. So
he's probably talking about DeAndre Hopkins. I bet he's talking about Hopkins. Well, let's make you an honest man, Brooks. Let's make me an honest man.
Okay. All right. Thoughts, I like being honest.
Yeah. Thoughts on DeAndre Hopkins. I know you had a piece in the Chronicle that there's interest possibly on DeAndre's side. How real do you think the chances are of DeAndre Hopkins becoming a Texan again?
Well, see, that's the big question here. We know the interest from Hopkins is real. Beyond my initial report, Jerome Solomon, our columnist, had heard from multiple people that DeAndre Hopkins looks at the Texans and he sees a team that's good enough to be interested in, which says a lot about where the Texans are right now. But, you know, I made as a, you know, in my duties as a reporter, looked into the Texans' interest on this end. And, I mean, just with this organization, it does seem like it doesn't do them any interest to say whether they're interested or are not. And their interest would be revealed by signing him. So, you know, right now that's the main question. You know, the Texans certainly have some needs at wide receiver, you know, especially with the expectations around John Metch. I got a chance to talk with Ben McDaniels earlier this week, and it's just like there are no expectations, but he's not putting a ceiling, he's not putting a floor for the guy, but you know, they drafted two rookies for a reason. It's unrealistic, in my opinion, to expect they'd become you know, top contributors in their first year. So the need's there. There are questions about Hopkins. You know, 21 season ended with the ACL injury, and then came into the latter half of last year, and I think, you know, just this production value, 700 yards, with, you know, Kyler Murray, Colt McCoy, the myriad of other guys after Murray went out, shows that he could still return to a really productive level. The thing is, through my conversations about this, the question is whether the Texans can make it fit within their cap space, which they could in eventual years. They'd have to move around right now. That'd just be something that they'd have to decide is worth it. And that's kind of the question with the Casario personnel department right now. What do they value? What do they see in Hopkins as a player? And I mean, there are some things that I think that Hopkins could fulfill in this offense. I mean, he has had some position versatility. We think about how Bobby Slowick is trying to get people in space, get yak yards. He's been in about like a third of his snaps on the inside slot. It's not exactly a lot. Like when you think about Noah Brown, it's almost 40%. And really his yak yardage isn't like, you know, in a huge amount of his time. Like 2019 with the Texans, it was about a third. That's not Deebo Samuel's level, like 40%. But it's a more dynamic receiver than they have available. So the Texans could look at this and see it makes sense. I was looking at some other examples of projected contracts. I think Texans cap does as good a job as anybody around here. And like I saw how they They could finagle things getting into future seasons. That places the onus a lot of, like, say it doesn't work out. You're taking a risk and possibly setting yourself up with dead money hits over the next couple of years with a player, you know, that's been hit with suspensions and with the PEDs, and then, you know, he had an injury history. So there are questions there the Texans would have to say, is this the fix? They're trying to get out of their losing ways, and they want to make the right decisions. And are there too many questions with this one? We'll see. And that's not something I know right now.
Is I guess the other big question that would affect whether the Texans could or would want to sign him is just how much interest is there genuinely from other teams? And even if there is interest, did Hopkins just miss the boat because of the timing of this? So that there's teams out there that have spent their cap money that they had allotted to free agents and everything this year.
Yeah, it's a good point, Seth. There's part of the conversation yesterday was really surrounding that. I mean, like the Texans are like other teams that went into the draft and made their decisions, and now they're sitting in a space where, you know, I do think the market was down for free agent wide receivers. If this were a conversation in March, it'd be a lot different. But right now, you know, you're looking at a situation where you look around in the free agency market, and DeAndre Hopkins is the most clear guy you take a look at. Kenny Golladay is the other, and I mean, I'm just bringing that name up because it's just like, if you're looking to add a receiver, Hopkins is kind of the blatant choice. So if teams are able to manipulate and they're looking to, you know, cut down on players, that's kind of what happens during the summer here, is they're going to get rid of about half their roster. But people could find a way to make it work. I was talking to somebody else about this too, that just in the nature of declaring interest for teams, that's all fine. You know, it's like saying, you know, I'm interested in a lot of girls and call them by name, but they may not, you know, care about me. So it takes two to want to do this. And I mean, you go out and you try and find as much interest with as many teams as possible to give you the opportunity. And how many of them are going to think, oh, the others are interested too? So that's the game that's going on right now. People will get a chance to visit with him, see his medicals, answer the questions they have about them. And then I also think teams, especially the Texans, aren't really influenced by other teams by what they place values on certain players. And if they're like, oh, this is what you're asking for, okay, well, that's, if you can get that from another team, great. But that's not something we're going to do. So that's all kind of the question that's going right now. I don't expect this is something that's going to get done this week. You know, from my conversation, it seems like this is the beginning of a process that could take a couple of weeks. So he's sitting in a scenario where he's the biggest name on the free agency market with wide receivers, and he's going to try and get the best deal for himself. And right now, that includes you know, the Texans. And I think there were questions about that, given his history with the team and the unceremonious trade out of Houston and his relationship with the team. And case is that, you know, it is a place that he'd be interested in going to.
Brooks Cabina joining us on the hotline, Houston Chronicle. He's our Texans insider here on Sports Radio 610. Let's shift gears over to C.J. Stroud, Brooks. Had a chance to be out at OTAs this week. I know you've written pieces on C.J. Stroud and the progression so far. It sounds like the reports are anywhere from positive to very glowing about C.J. Stroud. Does that match what you've seen out at OTAs?
Well, yeah, it's difficult for me to say, because, you know, I've only seen a couple of practices, and I don't want to get ahead of myself in saying that C.J. Stroud's going to be, you know, whatever superlative I can say. But the one thing I took away from this week was he did look a lot more comfortable. The week before, his just running out of play action rollouts and stuff, things that he hadn't done under center at Ohio State, you could see he was a bit shaky and a couple of wobbly passes. This week, he looked a lot more pure. His throwing tight spirals, hitting people in stride. The one thing, seeing team drills towards the end, the next step for him is going to be handling the rush in this offense. And the defense had its moments against him in that, but he did kind of recover and hit a couple of players in some tight spaces, tight windows. So, you know, talking with Gerard Johnson, who's entering being a quarterback's coach, a full-time quarterback's coach for the first time, I was asking him about that transition going into under center and things like that, and he said he's way, way ahead of where he should be right now. So there's the Texans coaches are really high on his development so far. And I mean, remember the week before, and I think, and I said this initially on you know, Clinton Show's show, but it's like, you know, I think it might have been overblown that he was starting in the middle behind Mills. That's just kind of like he didn't want anything handed to them, and they gave him a chance to prove himself. But that he is securing first team reps says a lot about what they think about him and his development right now. And to tie it back to the Hopkins deal, I mean, I know everybody was bringing up his podcast, how he was talking about what quarterbacks he wanted to play with. That was 11 days ago. And, you know, you start to learn more information and see things yourself and hear from other coaches. So, I mean, I think Stroud's definitely on the pace where, I mean, they drafted him number two overall, clearly needed a quarterback. This is a good news for them. The best case scenario for them is him entering the summer as a clear number one, so they can begin training camp with him in mind. And they're going to have these two joint practices against the Saints and the Dolphins. So the more that he's able to get in there and answer all these questions, because that's every coach, every player seems to have their own story about Stroud seeking them out. Matt Burke said he pulled him off the field after he threw a throw. He went back. I interpreted that as an interception, but that's not what I have. But you know, in training camp, he'll be able to get through all that too. So it's really going as best from as the Texans could hope for right now from what I could hear. And we'll see if that continues in training camp over the summer.
Brooks Cabina, Houston Chronicle. He is our Texans insider. Brooks, go get on your flight, man. Have a safe trip. We'll see you back here in a couple of weeks.
All right, I got 30 minutes. Good thing I got clear.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, get through that line quickly, man.
Don't tell everybody about clear.
TSA.
Yeah, I wish I had a sponsor too, right?
Yeah, good live read for clear. They needed that. They don't look to be thriving at all right now.
They're going to pull you off to the side anyway.
Talk to you later, Brooks. Have a safe trip. All right, there it is. Brooks Cabina joining us on the show. Boy, Kenny Golladay, Seth. I was glad he brought up that name. That gives you an idea. Like, yeah, DeAndre is the money may have dried up. There is a stark difference between DeAndre and anybody else you can find out there right now.
Yeah, and I wish I hadn't phrased it that way as the money drying up, because obviously teams can always do something. But the teams that are really eager to do something have already done it. It's a matter of, okay, now the next eager team is going to be a team that likely suffers an injury or something like that.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do some headlines next, including the Astros. The Astros finding another unsung hero in the rotation. We will have headlines for you next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, before we check in on headlines here, let's check in on an old cohort, an old friend, Deshaun Watson. Remember him? He's the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He used to be the quarterback for the Houston Texans. He is still tied to the Texans in so much as the Texans have the Browns' first-round pick. That is their only first-round pick that they have in the upcoming draft. So we continue for a year to root, for practical reasons, against the Browns and Deshaun Watson. After that, we'll be doing it for emotional reasons and revenge. But here is Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns, talking about how Deshaun Watson's doing so far.
There's no question. It's just his confidence in the system itself, understanding of what we're asking of him, and you know, how to communicate the line of scrimmage, everything from protections to calling plays in the huddle. He's improved tenfold since this time last year. And then he made a throw today I haven't seen. I got hair stood up on my arm. He dotted a a touchdown in the red zone that was really, really an impressive throw. So, I mean, you've seen it all start to come together, playing with a little swagger out there and having some fun.
Was that the throw to Elijah?
Yeah, it was a throw to Elijah. I mean, yeah, the seam route. That was over the hook player and right on the face mask. So that was a throw that degree of difficulty would have been high, and smoked it. So that's positive.
Has your hair stood up on your arm than any other ones? Or
it's not. It's been a long time. I will say that. And, you know, and I've been around some good ones, but that was one. I literally was got goosebumps. I was like, wow, that was a tremendous throw and catch.
Yeah, my bad news for Texan fans and Texan fans like me that are rooting against Watson. I think he's going to be good this year. I think he's going to get back to being a good football player again here at some point.
Well, part of it last year was that there were some pretty bad drops that would have changed the complexion of a lot of the games that he played. But, I mean, not enough to just all of a sudden make it that he had an awesome performance. Because part of it, too, is remember, they play in bad weather. So, statistically, statistically, he could play well, and it's just not going to be the same numbers that he had here. That offense is one that's going to want to continue to run the ball most likely, and I wonder if they're winning games, it won't matter. If they're not winning games and Deshaun isn't putting up the kinds of numbers that he used to, it's not going to go well up there. I think people will be there are a lot of people that are kind of maybe bargaining with themselves already to try to embrace Deshaun. But I feel like they could jump off the cliff real easily if the football performance isn't there with it.
What's the percentage chance he requests another trade? That he asks out of Cleveland at some point?
I was pretty aggressive with it at one point last year.
That's why I'm asking. You were, yeah.
Yeah, I think. Do you remember what I think I had put the over under as January of 2024?
Yeah, you thought it was definitely going to happen, and you attached a date to it.
I'm going to stay with, I think the over-under is January of 2024, but I'll wait. I would take the over or the later date on that one.
You would skew the juice towards over on that one.
Now, remember too that it needs to be, this is the, you can't make a determination on this until like March or April or so, because maybe in February it comes out that he had asked for a trade in late December or something.
I think
if it doesn't go well, there will be a maneuvering to try to get rid of Stefanski
for sure,
the coach. And if they feel like that's not going, and that would tend to happen in January.
Yes.
So either Stefanski gets fired and Deshaun stays, or he can't root out Stefanski and he asks for a trade.
I think Stefanski is on a kind of an underrated hot seat right now in Cleveland. You know, this is a big investment they've made in Watson. He's got to get this thing looking good.
I'm going to second guess myself just because I think the most realistic scenario, if it doesn't go well for the Browns, the most realistic scenario would be that the Browns say, well, look, we can't eat this Watson contract. It's just, we're not going to get what we paid for him. There's just too much. Like, we might like literally not be able to even maneuver this under the cap with any, and still have a football team. So we got to try a new coach, whoever Deshaun wants in here. I don't care if it's Eric Bieniemy or something. We'll get that guy in here because we've got no other choice.
They've shoved a ton of money. Like, even if they could find a trade partner for that, you know, where they got draft capital in return, they would have to take such a huge dead money hit because they've shoved so much of Deshaun's money into the future. You know, they spread it out over, you know, they've paid him huge signing bonuses each of these first 2 years with restructures.
And it would be a Deshaun Watson who hadn't played good football since the time of COVID.
He ain't getting three ones for him. That's for sure.
He's had the longest of all long COVIDs at that point by December of 2023.
That's right. That's right. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Regions Bank.
For the first time in 2 months, the Astros played a game on a Thursday. That had been their off day for the last 2 months, really the first couple months of the season. They play last night, the first of four, against the Los Angeles Angels. Because of the now pretty crowded schedule here, they're in the middle of a stretch of 17 straight days of playing baseball. They brought up Ronel Blanco from Sugarland to be their sixth starter. And a good night last night. A little shaky early, 48 pitches through the first two innings. In retrospect, Seth, him able to get out of the second inning by striking out Shohei Ohtani on a pitch that was way out of the zone. I mean, it was in the dirt, and Ohtani swung at it.
Yeah.
But striking him out with the bases loaded to keep that as a 1-0 game, if we're going back and kind of dissecting last night's game, might have been one of the biggest moments of the game in retrospect. The game the Astros went on to win, by the way, 5-2 last night.
That could have been his. That could have been his Hunter Brown moment, where you know wouldn't be able to recover from that and rally like he did. But it was the baseball gods giveth, the baseball gods taketh away. They gaveth last night.
They did. They did. Here's Dusty Baker on Renell Blanco's performance.
He was good after he settled down. You know, like started out a little shaky, and then at second inning he had a bunch of pitches, and you start counting pitches, and you're like, you know, his maximum was around 90, and then he settled down in those innings in between, and he got out a couple tough jams, and you know, with some tough hitters, and you know, he threw some quality pitches tonight.
He threw 94 pitches, 48 the first two innings, 46 over the next 3 1/3. The bases were trafficy. he had 10 yeah. base runners in 5 1/3 innings. So that's he was pitching out of jams quite a bit. But you know, end result was a good one.
I feel like you need an extra day of rest after that to recover from the emotional trauma. Yes. Yeah, like you're frazzled at that point.
Yes.
Yeah, your eyes all crazy and wide. I think Blanco's performance is a good reminder too of just okay, you know, we've seen him in the majors not as a starter, and that as a reliever sometimes, like, you have one bad inning and it doesn't matter if your next five innings as a reliever are awesome ones. All you remember is that one bad inning, and yeah. And people remember, well, I remember the time he came in and he loaded the bases and all of this and that. As a starter, you've got some time to rectify it.
Yep.
So Blanco is, I don't think he's any different necessarily than he was before, but maybe he demonstrated at least some mental fortitude there in his ability to work his way out of a rough start and a couple of jams.
No doubt. Here's Alex Bregman on Renell Blanco's performance last night.
Blanco was huge today. Just giving us length, honestly, and not only length, but really quality innings, attacking, competing. It's huge.
So that was Bregman on Blanco. Boy, Seth, you think about it. The Astros right now, they're hanging in there in the division. They're a few games back of the Texas Rangers. I think over time, this is the Astros division. That's what the odds makers think. I think that's what there's probably even Ranger fans that might be thinking that. Rangers playing some good baseball. It is amazing the Astros are where they are right now this season when you consider, A, really how poorly they've been playing offensively for the level of talent that's on the roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, B, and this is where Blanco kind of hammers this home for me. They've got six starters right now. Framber Valdez and Christian Javier are two of the best starters in the American League. The other four guys were in Sugarland this time last year, or in the minors at least. They weren't in Major League. And Belak might have been on one of his up and downs at that time. I don't remember. But Belak spent most of the last season in the minor leagues. Hunter Brown, Brandon Belak, J.P. France, Renell Blanco. That's 2/3 of their rotation right now. And they're, 9 or 10 or 11 games over 500. It's really, I mean, kudos to the Astros coaching staff, the pitching staff, pitching coaches, and just as you pointed out yesterday, just the system itself, the ability to develop some of these guys and put them in a position to come in. And every game's a big game for the Astros. They're playing to win a division and win a World Series. It's really incredible they are where they are right now this season.
Of all the surprises for this team, because the Astros figure out a way to kind of surprise you every year, which like at the beginning you can't figure out exactly how they're, why, or what's going to be the strength of their team necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the years when they had both an incredible offense and defense, that's different. But I think the pitching being as it still doesn't feel like dominating is the right word, even though they've got the best ERA in baseball.
Right.
Because there's been what's the word you use? Agita. There's been agita the whole time. Like, you're always kind of stressed about, like, all right, wait a second, this J.P. France, I like his mustache and all, but I just don't know about this guy.
And his rec specs. So, like, I like his rec specs.
Yes. Every couple weeks, you're being faced with a J.P. France or a Blanco or whomever else.
Yeah.
And, or just the old problem of a Rafael Montero. And it just doesn't feel... And maybe that's because we're so spoiled that, like, once you've seen, once you've gotten a dose of a first and second place Cy Young guy, you know, award finish,
yeah,
it's just we're a little bit spoiled in what really, really good pitching looks like.
I think you're 100% right about the spoiled part. We definitely are. Now, I do think with, like, Blanco last night, we just pointed out, he put 10 guys on base in five innings and change. There, Chandler Rome had an article about France and Bielak, where, you know, commending them about probably giving you better performance than expected, you know, certainly keeping you in games, but kind of, honestly, like, kind of a harrowing article as well, because he's like, but, you know, they're expected this and they're FIP that, and, like, all the numbers indicate that France and Bielak are basically at a hot blackjack table right now. You know, they're getting good cards right now at the table. That could turn on them. He called them candidates for regression. Now, Hunter Brown's on a different level.
Not a candidate for regression.
Candidate for regression, Seth. Yes, yes.
That's
a CFR
slogan.
Yeah.
I'm the candidate for regression. Everybody else wants to make these bold promises. Right. I'm the one that'll tell you, shoot you straight, mister.
I like the cut of this Payne guy right here. He's not setting expectations too high.
I like to return to a better time, the good old days. Back, remember, I want to get back to a time when we can rejoice about Dow 10,000.
Right, right.
Yes, that's my deal.
Seth Payne, the architect of the Great Regression. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, back to the Strohs. Yeah. So the staff's been getting it done. They're winning games. The end result, they're winning games. They're 2.5 back of the Rangers right now. 3 in the loss column. 2.5 back. Tonight will be fun. Fromber versus Shohei. Two guys you don't even need to say the last names of. When you say Fromber v. Shohei, you know who's pitching. Mostly because I can't name another Fromber nor another Shohei on the planet. But still, they're both really good at their jobs. And it should be fun tonight out at the yard. Looking forward to that.
Shohei. I wonder how common a name Shohei is in
Japan.
Is it
like Bob?
Yeah, like I feel like I've seen enough Japanese names that I don't think Shohei is like super, super common.
No, it's the first time I've seen it. Ime Udoka threw out the first pitch last night at the game. He bounced it. It's okay. It's, you know, it's probably, if we were to equate it to a season in the NBA, I would say, you know, back end of the lottery type season. If your season goes the way your coach throws a first pitch at a game, I don't know that the Rockets may be struggling to, like, get into the little play-in tourney at the end of the season. The Texans are going to the playoffs based on D'Amico's first pitch. Right down the middle, calm, cool, collected. That was good stuff by D'Amico. Udoka was interviewed after the first pitch and was asked about his squad and what he's thought of him. He's had a chance to sit down with some of these young players. What's he think of his crew right now?
They're more impressive than I initially knew. Obviously, with the interview process, got to dig in a little bit as far as that, and the guys are really an impressive group. Like, I knew about them, played against them a few times, but really watching the film and getting to know them and then having some lunches and dinners, I'm very impressed with the young group we have.
All right. He had to have wanted to – there's got to be some part of Ime Udoka, Seth, that really wants to build his own thing from the ground up, because the fact of the matter is, if he had just waited it out, there ended up being a lot of good jobs open in the NBA. Like, Milwaukee opened up, you know, Phoenix opened up.
Yeah, yeah.
Philly.
But it also, because of the circumstances of his departure from his previous stop, I wonder if he just felt like, all right, I'm going to – these guys are – they're a good fit. I don't know exactly what the market is out there. Teams are going to be very careful in how aggressively they're going to pursue Udoka. And I think the Rockets, you know, I think we're appropriately – I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but – You gotta draw a line these days between, okay, what is speculation and what do we know when it comes to personal scandals. And you know, we can't let you can't let basically the court of public opinion that's completely uninformed drive your decisions about who to hire.
Yep.
You know, so I think the Rockets just did what they felt was right. They went after him when other teams weren't willing to yet, and they're hopefully the beneficiaries for that.
He's been impressed with the young guys.
Shohei is a common first name in Japan.
Okay.
It is written like this in kanji. Let me draw it up for you real quick.
Okay.
There you go.
Seth is moving his hand left, right, up, down, left, left, right.
Character.
Up
yeah. can be translated to correct, proper, peace, level, and equal. It's a unisex name, and it is relatively popular among men.
Okay, so it's like Taylor or Jordan over here. Yeah.
You know what? That sounds about right. It doesn't sound like it's common. It's relatively common. It's not John or Joe or anything like that.
But it's unisexual.
But it's not uncommon.
Yeah. You know, it can be, either way. So, I choose to believe Shohei is Japanese for Taylor. That's what I choose to believe. You can go either way with it.
Taylor, like T-A-Y-L-O-R, not Taylor. Yeah. Like his grandfather was a Taylor.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You're listening to KALT and KALT HD2, an Odyssey station. Drama yesterday, Seth, surrounding social media. Oh, by the way, NBA Finals last night. The Nuggets beat the Heat, and the game was never really that close. And I think the Nuggets beat the Heat in five.
As I predicted.
I put my money where my mouth was. I took the Nuggets minus 2.5 games in this series for big bucks. So they got to win by, they got to either sweep or win it in five. And I think they will. I think they're just way, way better.
I trust you, Sean.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.